WBAI.org or pledge right now from your smartphone by texting WBAI to 41444. We thank you in advance.
Ship with Mike Sargent, no doubt, on its way. This is WBAI New York. You're listening to Halo, featuring E. Graham Lewis.
The next day was much as the previous. You know how they talk of the walls closing in? Well, I was looking for a door, an exit. Check in at a hotel, that's what you do. No phone, no view, no you. An old place to call home. A place to return to. Late. To wash and to write tomorrow's script. To look for lost hope. Quickly in 12x6. Breakfast is a sad experience. What have all the inmates done wrong to be here? Jesus, only passing through.
you like music?
Yes.
Why don't you put a record on? I wish they'd hurry up with that transmission. I want to go to bed. I suggest that you reach deep down inside yourself there and try and find something that'll keep you awake just a little while longer, because this transmission coming up may just rekindle your will to live.
Listen to this, boys. Night Shift.
Where are my people? 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 Where are my people?
Night Shift.
It's not exactly the electric chair. I'm going to count to 10 as you're falling asleep. And when I'm finished, you'll be deeply, deeply asleep. One, falling asleep. Two, falling asleep. Falling asleep. Three, falling asleep.
Night shift.
Four, falling asleep. Five, falling asleep.
Feeling you're gonna have.
Deep and erotic.
Night Shift.
Mondays.
Midnight.
Night Shift.
Night Shift.
We'll be right back.
I grew up in the projects at the end of Coney Island, and it was literally a dead end.
I went to a gym, and my life totally changed.
I spent every single day at the gym. For me, it was empowering, and it was my ticket out. On some level, I think I always fantasized about being a superhero. So one day, I'm reading a story about this guy. He calls himself a real-life superhero, and he goes out on the streets and fights crime. So I decided to dig a little deeper, and I was surprised to find out he wasn't the only one. It blew my mind. Are they vigilantes? Are they cosplayers? Yeah, I don't know. So I'm really interested in finding one of these guys and asking them the same question that people ask me. Why? I think the biggest question is, why did you decide to become a superhero?
I guess you'd call it a Lord of the Rings type quest.
The first thing you want to do is make them think you're going to do something with your hand. No trouble, I'm just going to leave, all right?
This is my way of giving back for all of the bad things I did as a younger man.
You're going into some really dangerous areas.
I'm in Belltown and Cap Hill and places where you might have people pull guns on you.
I'm probably going to push you a little bit against your limits.
Ha ha! He's really cool. He kind of reminds me of like a Spider-Man. Why do you wear a costume?
It gets people's attention and they really don't want to mess with me.
By the gods! Ha ha!
I think it's amazing what they do.
We've picked up 3,000 needles just like these.
This is a school.
We all need inspiration. We all need help. These are super good heroes.
But you have to wonder whether or not it's a good idea to be running around with pepper spray and tasers. You're looking for trouble. Trouble's gonna find you. I wondered if I had what it takes. Could I do it? And more importantly, should I?
If you were a superhero, what would you call yourself?
Oh, gosh. I guess it would have to be Misfit. Oh, f***. What did I get myself into?
Byron Saunders.
And I'm here with Misfit.
Mike Sargent.
Byron Saunders.
And now I've seen this.
Yes, you've seen the movie. And you've seen the documentary. And first I wanted to ask you, what were your thoughts seeing the documentary? The documentary is called, by the way, you are tuned to listener-sponsored radio, WBAI 99.5 FM in New York. I'm Mike Sargent. I'm here with Byron Saunders. And believe it or not, Elena, who has been missing from the air for quite some time.
Hello, studio's Elena. Glowing.
Hooray for me.
All right. And
lucky you.
And Elena, you actually got to see The Adventures of Misfit as well.
Yes, I did.
All right. So I want to ask, first I want to ask your thoughts on it. Then I want to hear from Elena because, you know, no matter who you ask on the planet, you're going to get a different answer from Elena. But the point is, there's a film. It's a new film. It's called The Adventures of Misfit. And they were kind enough to donate some copies here to the station. Originally, it was going to be for a pledge, but that didn't happen in terms of logistics. So now it's actually going to be free for those who are fascinated and interested. But basically, it's a documentary. Misfit is a fitness, bodybuilding champion, award-winning bodybuilding champion who found out about real-life superheroes. And these are people who, around the country, dress up in costumes and literally fight crime, help the community, feed the poor, help the homeless. And so they do, you know, true life heroic acts. And she was intrigued and started to get into it and eventually became one herself. And it's a pretty fascinating documentary. It says a lot about a lot of things, especially the human condition. It's interesting that it is real. I got a chance to talk to her and the director, and so I'm going to play an interview, but we're going to have, again, it's where life is like science fiction. Real life superheroes running around getting beat up and tasering people. You know, I do want to know what hero you would be, Byron. But first,
What did you think of the movie? Like I said, we're going to be talking with Denise Messino and the filmmaker Greg Simpson. So stay tuned for that. Now, Byron, talk to me.
Adventures of Misfit. Yes, what I really, really liked was that here's a woman who took on a challenge of her height, a challenge of her physical being. And when I say physical being, this woman is like Miss Universe body wise. Okay.
She's one of those pageants.
She's got muscular definition. She is in competition.
She wins competition.
And her story, in the midst of all of this, because you're attracted to her physical beauty, and she's a very good looking woman. But you also then begin to understand her journey and her story, because here's a woman who's afflicted with scoliosis and her spine is curvatured, but she is still battling beyond some kind of zone where she pushes her body, brain, and mind to. And now Miss Fit, who is really ordained Miss Fit in her journey to become a superhero the imagine of a superhero, and she becomes Misfit and is accepted into an organization in a crowd of superheroes. Folks, there are superheroes out here in the world. Now, you may not think of them because of their superpower, but they are superheroes, sheroes. Those who wear capes are behind a specific...
Elena used to be a superhero.
I can be a hero.
Still a superhero.
And those of you who haven't never seen me, I have the body just like her.
That's right.
So just when you hear my voice.
Yeah, but if you look at the Deuce, you'll see Elena later on the Deuce. Right. Now,
so in my opinion, because ultimately, I congratulate her, because on the journey, she shows you she actually really learned some lessons in life. About herself, about her family, about the community that she is representing, and the community that she must serve.
Right, there are a lot of themes in the community. Yes. Is one of the themes, living in the community, doing something in the community, and the community of those who dress up
as like superheroes.
Exactly. So it's pretty fascinating. Yeah. Now again, Byron.
Yes,
you know, I've known you a long time.
Yes, sir.
And I have a sense of your taste. Elena, what did you think of the film? And tell me what your thoughts were.
I enjoyed it. The beginning. I mean, the first segment with the actual superheroes. That was inspiring and interesting. That's why. I enjoyed about her and watching her is not necessarily. She's a very attractive woman, but
I understand. You're not turned on like Byron is.
No, I mean, he could have his whole half hour, obviously, about that. But but that's fine, because she's very humble, which I thought was actually very endearing, and that is one of the most attractive traits in any male or female.
Yes.
And but also too, with the besides being like getting into the whole pomp and circumstance and fanfare of the actual, you know, characters. So you get to, that's why that really grabbed me from the get-go. And her interaction being kind of shy, and she says that. That's why I like it, because she's, you know, obviously trying to carry this project, you know, on her own in the sense of being the spokesperson. But yet she's still be able to stand back and say, listen, I'm nervous driving the car on the plane. I'm tired, but I'm scared. I don't know what I'm going to expect from each and every one of them. And some of them actually delivered in the ways of, okay, you know, you're whacked off the planet kind of thing. And then you're kind of like reacting to that with her. She's not standing like, you know, as like a Barbara Walters, like, you know, pedestal. And then here I am trying to interpret what I'm watching. She's like, yeah, this is freaky. And some of them, and like even the first one, you know, the first one who's like takes the, you know, and you realize it was interesting. She started with the master guy that like had like every bone broken, jaw broken, everything, had a really rough personal life. And he takes it physically to another level. And then she starts to gradually, you know, show us like some that had like the one guy who was just kind of like, you know, and she didn't, and they must have edited him. I'm like, the Mega Man, whatever.
Lenny, you know,
I'm going on and on.
You gotta, you can't do like the Martin, where you can't say, you know, you gotta say something.
I know. Okay. Well, that's what I said. After that, my interest wasn't particularly held.
I understand, but you were fascinated by the characters and yes. you were inspired by that.
Yes, the initial segment.
Okay, all right. Mm-hmm. And Byron Saunders, now, what are your are you interested to hear what these filmmakers had to say about this project?
Yes, because I think there was a message that they really want us to get, and I want to understand the style for delivering messages. I would have to say over the last several days I've seen several movies and several shorts or even full movies, but I must say I've seen a myriad of storytelling for which some I like, and I think the younger generation is actually coming into a new fashion of language and style to tell the story. And I'm very interested in that because it's blending some old school with some new school. And I think that's the generation that's coming up with making films that are really ready to step and take a, you know, open the envelope wide open.
Well, you know, it's interesting, you know, and you're talking about taking a film to a new level. And
yes.
I know you have experience in film. You know, I'm a filmmaker, and Elena studied media, and you know, and that's how we connected beyond our initial relationship. But, you know, I went to the Documentary Film Awards, the Critics' Choice Documentary Film Awards, yes. last week. It was at Brick.
Okay.
And everybody who's anybody in documentary filmmaking was there. Barbara Koppel was there. Yes. And they gave a Lifetime Achievement Award to Errol Morris, yes. who, you know, did Thin Blue Run. And,
yes.
and he said something in his acceptance speech, and he was directing it because there are so many other documentary filmmakers there. It was sort of like a we, and when he said it, he's talking about what it is to be a documentary filmmaker. And he says, you know, first thing he says, I hope this is a mid-career award, you know. But he said, the beauty of making a documentary is that you get a chance, or he said that one of the great things is that you get a chance to reinvent the form. And that's true. And, you know, the mystery guest actually was telling me about a new Abel Ferrara documentary, which, you know, you take a filmmaker like Abel Ferrara, and it's like, okay, if he makes a documentary, he's going to put his unique narrative style on it. He's going to make choices that nobody else would, and thereby reinventing the form. You know, he'll do something different. And that's what's so great about documentaries, that they can be so different. And like you said, the myriad of storytelling. So, Elena, any more thoughts? Like, about filmmaking and having this protagonist? You said you found her humbleness the most appealing part.
Right. Where you can really, like, to answer with a creative form or another avenue where she was able to, again, express herself, where it wasn't, like, we didn't question her motives and we didn't question her integrity towards the project. Therefore, it drew you in even further and wanted to allow you to be involved.
So her integrity and her non-judgmental attitude allowed you to be less judgmental, perhaps.
And she's right, because there was a moment in the piece where it was very emotional. You really were brought to her own emotional level of having been in a sensitive place in her life. And she exposed herself to tell part of the story. And you were drawn into it. You're very much right, Elena. And I really enjoyed that part of her because I wasn't expecting it. Because as it was juxtaposed to her travel down another road in her life, then you get this moment of sobriety and passion and feeling with her family. That was very nice.
I think that could have been cut down a little bit.
It could have been. Yeah.
And it was like, okay, because it started to segue into it.
But I wasn't expecting it, you know. So yeah. It brought her story to a very human level as she still was super Shiro. You know, still body.
Elena's just jealous, just so you know.
I'm bitter.
And still fighting her
own. I'm bitter of boob.
Yeah. I don't want to hear about her life. Cut that part out. Right, so you tuned to Listener Sponsored Radio, WBAI 99.5 FM. I'm going to have a brief interview with Denise Messino, who is the subject, who is Misfit, and filmmaker Misfit. Greg Simpson.
I'm talking about Misfit,
Who is the, you know, somebody need to make a documentary about Elena. Greg, who's a filmmaker whose idea it was to make this film, and I have to say, it is a fascinating thing. It's fascinating for me to learn something. You know, I love learning something. I didn't know there were people
because
out there
so
doing
rare.
This. And yes, I should have learned my lesson about Elena long ago, but I didn't. And so take a listen, because I did talk to her. I got to ask her about what inspires her and what it was that made her, you know, want to take this journey. And I asked him the same thing, what, you know, what inspired him and what kind of stories does he want to tell as a filmmaker.
And I'm here with Misfit pro bodybuilder Denise Messino and the director Greg Simpson. Greg, Denise, welcome to WBAI.
Thank you for having us.
All right. First, I'm going to have to start with you, Denise. You talk about this a little bit in your documentary, but I have to ask you, you know, you clearly are someone who, when you get inspired, you get inspired. From the time you were a little girl, you were inspired to bodybuild and become like the amazingly fit woman you are today, but finding out about real superheroes inspired you to do a whole lot of things that are covered in the movies. But can you talk to me a little bit about what inspiration means to you and what inspired you not just to research this but to actually make a documentary about it?
You know, I grew up with parents who told me that I could do anything I wanted and be anything I wanted in life. And so whenever I saw something that interested me, I threw myself into it. That was true from seeing bodybuilders, athletes, growing up as a girl with no brothers, watching shows like the Wonder Woman show. I always had this idea that through a certain amount of fitness and athleticism that I could exert a certain amount of power over, I guess, my life and accomplish pretty much anything I set my mind to. And so that attitude came from my upbringing, and I have to credit my parents with that, and I'm grateful for it. Discovering that there were people out in the world calling themselves real-life superheroes was something that Greg did. Our director, first and foremost, and when he brought it to my attention, I was skeptical. I think I had a pretty healthy dose of skepticism, and it made me think about comic book drawings, which were sort of this physical ideal that, you know, I always aspired to on some level. I feel like, you know, you look at the comic book superheroes, and whether it's a Wonder Woman or a She-Hulk or Batman or Superman, they have the bodybuilder's sort of frame. They look fit and strong and powerful. So I connected to that image in that way as an athletic pursuit. But the idea of being a superhero seemed strange to me. When Greg brought it to my attention, it was something I had a healthy dose of interest in. Greg decided it was a good documentary idea.
For me, it started with comic books, really. You know, I had a fascination with comics when I was little, and I wanted to be a comic book artist my whole life, at least all the way up to high school. And I would draw pictures every single day. Really, instead of paying attention to my lessons in class, I would draw, and I drew all the time. And that was until I got to high school and discovered and then I took a filmmaking class. And we made these little Super 8 movies. That's where that was a jumping off point for that anyway.
What inspired you to want to make a film about this? I mean, because I can see, though Denise may not have been the initiator of this, she clearly was inspired by what you were doing, and it inspired her to do things, which I don't want to completely give away in the movie, but what inspired you? I mean, I grew up reading comic books as well. I used to go to science fiction conventions. I didn't dress up, But, you know, I'm a big fan, you know, so, like, there's nothing about this movie that seems weird to me because I was going to science fiction conventions before they called it cosplay, okay? So I'm curious, what made you say, you know what, I'm going to go around the country and follow these strange people who are doing this great stuff?
Well, you know, it started with a story in Rolling Stone, and we read about this, mainly about this one guy, and it was such a wild story that we had to just buy a camera and fly out to Florida and go meet this guy and see what it was all about, see if there was a story there, and see if it was something that, you know, would make a movie, because I wanted to see a movie about it, right? So that's what made me think that it was a good story. And this character was Master Legend, larger than life, very colorful guy. And going out there and hoping that we could track him down, because, you know, we didn't really have his phone number. We didn't have his real name. You know, we found him on the internet, and it was about, you know, it was kind of all a leap of faith, hoping he'd reach out to us and follow through on, you know, the, you know, filming with us, which is what he said he would do, but we didn't know for sure.
Well, it's interesting that you say that, I have to say, because, you know, my first question was, well, why didn't you just use the Master Legend signal and put that in the sky, and then he would have come? But, so tell me a little bit now, for just to explain this to most people who don't know, because I'm a filmmaker as well, and I'm actually working on a documentary myself. But generally, there is some sort of script or outline of what you want to do. And besides traversing the country to maybe meet some of these people, starting with Master Legend, what was your initial idea of what this documentary would be? And this is, you know, for both of you. And then how did it evolve as you started working on it?
Well, I'll start first. And I'll start by saying that we didn't know where it was going to go. We didn't know if it was even going to be a movie. We didn't know if it would go beyond meeting Master Legend. And we met him, and then that proved to be pretty interesting, and then, you know, then we kept going. But I don't think we really knew where the story was going to go. It was just an investigation, and it went places that I have to say that surprised me, certainly. And I think with a, you know, with a documentary, you have to be open to the story unfolding in front of you. And there's a quote, I don't remember who said it, but if the quote goes something like this about making a documentary movie: if you make the movie you set out to make, you weren't paying attention, or something to that effect, because the story will tell you what it wants to be.
I concur.
I think that's a really great point. I think that on some level, you know, we all go into situations in life and we have certain expectations of situations, circumstances, people, and if you go in open enough to anything, you find that your expectations are usually not met. They are they're different from the actual experience that you're going to have in the actual story. And I can tell you personally that I was very skeptical about the people that called themselves real life superheroes at the beginning of this journey. And, you know, my attitude initially was, okay, you know, you want to go out into the world and you want to make it a better place and you want to do good things and you want to help people, and that's a wonderful thing. I love that idea. You can do that, but why do you have to, you know, wear a mask, and do you really need a cape, and, you know, is your intention to help people? Is it to get attention for yourself? What is your real purpose? And I learned so much with each new superhero that I met. new real life superhero that I met that surprised me. And, you know, the biggest surprise of all, I guess, is that, you know, I found myself working with, you know, large groups of costumed activists or real life superheroes. And the whole thing is something that I could never have imagined. I really, this story, what happened, where we ended up, who we met, how they changed my life personally. It made me think about what I was doing in the world. So yes, you know, when you ask somebody who is feeding the homeless or patrolling their communities, whether they're doing it in a mask and a crazy costume or not, what they're doing and why they're doing, I think that it puts you in a position where you do have to question, you know, before you judge somebody, what are you doing, you know? And it made me very introspective. And, you know, Master Legend was the first person, and he charmed me. There were things that he said that resonated. But at the same time, I thought, hey, this is just strange, and I don't really get it. But, of course, with each new person I met, I saw more things that made me think more about what my contributions are in life, in my community, in the world. I think that's the beauty of a great documentary, because it makes you think. And this whole project definitely put me in a place of thinking about what I was doing in the world.
Excuse me. And that was an interview with Denise Messino and Greg Simpson, who have a new film called Misfit. And if you want a copy, because they've actually donated autographed copies of the Blu-ray and the DVD, I just need you to email films@wbai.org. That's films@wbai.org, and put in the heading Misfit DVD. And that's it. And I will have one mailed to you. We only have a dozen. But I have to say, it's really a fascinating documentary. It's something worth seeing, something that will give you a new perspective on what a superhero is, especially now that Thor is out, right, Brian?
Mike. Elena. Mm-hmm. Give me your definition of superhero.
Yes.
What makes a superhero?
Besides Byron.
I was going to say me, but all right.
You too.
I will do a hypothetical with Byron.
Super Shiro. So what makes a superhero Shiro?
You're asking Elena. Go ahead, Elena.
What are the values? In your opinion, that would be the qualities to be identified as a super Shiro, superhero.
That's a bit of a trick question. I mean, you can't really...
Trick question! Riddle me this, Elena!
I'm going to take you to my lair, Byron. If you ask me one of those questions again on air...
A trick question, Cape Crusader!
Sorry.
You're not wearing the costume or the mic. Right. I am. Focus on the hero.
Focus. Thank you, Mike. Thank you, Mr. Guest. Thank you, Elena.
Byron asked me, Mike.
Anyway, yes.
You have to really define,
He's asking you to define it, Elena. You define it.
I'm trying to answer.
He's asking you. Spock.
And you're contradicting your premise here. You're saying he's asking you, and you're speaking. So how is that, you know, you're telling me to answer, but
you,
I can't when you're doing
you
the answering.
Go,
I'm right. Hey, man. No, seriously. I think that, an individual has to, define himself or herself as a hero. It's difficult to define one generalistic characteristic that, you know. Qualities, right. but you can't even...
You're getting as good as Byron there. You could be running for office soon.
Qualities, but, you know, not even to confine it to just verbiage, like qualities or nouns or adjectives.
Not even to define it like qualities. You know, Elena, this is, you know, you've become dodgy. This is a very dodgy answer. I just want you to, it's very dodgy. Go ahead, Byron. You can continue your line of questions. You're trying to get an answer out of her. It's like getting an answer out of you.
It is coming.
Because I like seeing this, by the way. This is karmic payback here.
Because Ms. Fitz takes a journey into herself, which is, as I said, it becomes really her story, that you're taking this journey. And because she finally ultimately gets to the point where she really has, I think she understands who she really is. One of those journeys that we saw, because this was several journeys, and one of those journeys that we saw took her to a place where she really didn't anticipate that she was going to receive, and it was the humbleness of feeding the hungry, clothing the naked, sheltering the homeless, healing the sick, and giving hope to the hopeless, because at that point, her superhero values came interactive with people who actually believed that. That was their superhero strength. Their power was that they focused on doing those five things.
It was a trick question.
And in general, but it showed her strength, and that's what I said. But with respect to her character, because she shares it, she bears a lot of stuff on her
soul.
Now,
let me ask you a question, Byron.
Yes.
If you were going to be a superhero.
Yes. My attribute.
A, what would be your superhero name? And B, what would be your power?
First, the answer to the first question, B, C, S.
Oh, my God. All right, so that, all right, your BCS.
Right. It's like the B-boy. B-boy's on the back.
We can just remove the C. Okay, remove the C. Remove the C,
that's
and then.
That's why I put the C
in
there.
All right, but Byron, all right, so then what's your power?
Healing the soul.
You have healing power.
Yes,
healing the soul.
Healing the soul.
So that you're like the soul healer.
Yes.
Wow, the soul healer.
I want you to come out of that.
Yes, all right, so Elena. If you were going to be a superhero, what would be your superhero name and what would your power be?
I think it would have to be Sexlena. Sexlena.
Sexlena. So you would have the power, you'd be like a female Scorpio. You'd have the power over men's sexuality.
Yes, and with that, I would instill confidence, self-confidence, not just within male.
I'll sleep with you, you can be president.
Okay, well, that's on the DVD.
Instilling confidence with your sexuality.
That version went straight to DVD. The actual one that went into theaters would actually include me not only developing his man member, but
man
also
member as opposed to his
female member.
I got you.
To make him more in touch with himself and those around him. But it's seriously.
We're getting serious. But seriously. If pigs could fly.
I'd be on the back. But I would love to be the self-confidence healer.
The self-confidence healer? You're biting off of Byron. Byron's a soul healer, and you're the self-confidence healer. Come on. Come on. You can't bite. You
want something
off of
trivial.
Byron, she's biting off of you.
Welcome to the
I'm
League
not
of bite. Justice.
Oh, please. We disagree on too much for
welcome
me to bite off anything.
Welcome to the League
you
of
You can bite
justice.
Off his finger. All right, but you are tuned to listener-sponsored radio, WBI. We've been talking about real-life superheroes. There's a new movie called The Adventures of Misfit. If you'd like a copy, you can just email us at films@WBAI. Just put Misfit DVD and put, of course, your address and all that stuff. Because people go, I want it. And that's it. You know, they have some email name like Bobapa.
I have to say about Misfit, her life in this documentary is transformational.
Yes, well, it is transformational, and that's what makes you go on the journey. Yes. That's what creates a narrative spine. All stories, Byron, are about someone starting somewhere and ending up somewhere else,
Oh, that's so deep.
Shut up. Elena, before I have beat you with your own limbs. All right.
Can we bow to you, the ultimate superhero?
What I'm, something, Elena? You know what my power is? To have like a mute button and a pause button that can stop everyone.
The mute button.
Mute man.
You're mute, man.
Stop talking, Alina.
That's my power. Anyway, can I finish? Can I finish?
You know, one thing that... No, you can't... Okay, go ahead.
Can I finish what I'm saying? Anyway.
Like, but think about it. Mike is the perfect superhero. He doesn't even really need to answer the question.
Of course I am.
To say that I am... Look, have been avoiding all this evening and all the time I've been on this show. How? Who is the biggest avoider of answering a question?
It would all be determined by who holds the finger.
That is a superpower.
An avoidance?
Yes, it is. It's a superpower.
It's cowardly.
Excuse me.
Listen, you know what?
Mute man. Mute man. Is it true that you have the power of pushing the mute button?
I think we already established that, Byron. You're drifting away.
Thank you.
But the reason why I think that Mike is the ultimate superhero is because he's got the wardrobe for it.
Nice.
There's no Rickies for Mike. Everything he wears is a superhero outfit.
Night shift. Oh, yeah.
I mean, you look at Mike and you're like, I can't believe he's wearing that. My eyes, my eyes.
Night shift. It's my
This is Lena in her final days.
He will not only mute me, he will mutilate me.
Yes, and in the end, she practically begged him to destroy her.
He won't make me eat vegetables. No.
The name of the show.
Night Shift.
Now, we're going to have another movie. I have another movie. It's called By the Light of the Moon. It just came out this past Friday. And I have the director of that. I have an interview with her as well.
I saw this movie.
Written, yes, you did. You saw it tonight.
Oh my God.
By the Light of the Moon. Yes. Female writer, director, female cinematographer. It's an interesting film. It's got a lot to say about a lot of things. I wish you had seen it, Elena, because it's clearly female centric, female protagonist. But I'd like to see if there are some calls people want to tell us what kind of powers they'd want to have. 347-335-0818. 347-335-0818. 347-335-0818.
347-335-0818. Obviously, not vision is not one of your superpowers.
347-335-0818. 347-335-0818. 347-335-0818. Give us a call.
Is it time for mute yet?
Night shift.
The name of the show.
Night shift.
Shift. Night.
It only happens once a week. 347-335-0818.
It's my favorite show.
Thank you. You know, part of a compilation I'm putting together called The Best of DGM.
Oh, wow. No, stop, stop, stop with the music. Man. You are a madman.
How about this track? You ready?
Yeah.
We'll take a trip. We're going to Baghdad. See, Byron was grooving with that. Elena was like,
I know, it bunched up your flannel shirt like I've never seen.
All right, somebody was calling and we missed him. 347-335-0818. We're going to take one call before we go to the director and writer
of this
of Light of the Moon, which came out this past Friday. And again, I support these independent films because it's interesting to see, you know, especially for me, seeing films. I see so many films, and I said this to the director. Written and directed by men, you know, and you know, sometimes they tackle subjects and they have female protagonists and whatnot, but you can always tell when a film is made by a woman, Within the first 5 minutes of this film, you know, there's an exchange between the main character. She's got a boyfriend who, you know, it's about a female architect who, you know, makes a mistake one evening and ends up going home from a party drunk, listening to her headphones, and she gets attacked. But her boyfriend was supposed to be with her. And we see a moment when the boyfriend comes and he's like, oh, he shows up to her job and tell her he can't come. And just the whole way the scene went down and the whole way it was written suggests an insight. And, you know, I often liken the paucity of believable or full-rounded female characters in film to black characters. You know, when you'll have a black character that's put in, but you're like, no black guy would do that, or no black woman would do that. And you know it's written by somebody who really doesn't get it, who doesn't understand, and didn't obviously reach out to whoever they know, or don't know, I guess, to make it believable. Are you with me?
I am with you,
man. How do you feel about what I'm saying, Elaine? Do you have any comment on that? Do you not agree? You don't even know what I'm saying, but you don't agree.
I do, I understand.
She looks at me, she gives me, I don't agree with you.
No.
I don't even know what you're saying, but I don't agree.
No, your delivery was just a little drone, but...
My delivery is a little drone.
Ooh, all right. Someone misspoke. No, when... if you can
you're
see
droning
when the...
on, Mike, and I was with you, but... yeah.
Then I started to knit, and I just lost.
Just like with the movie, you fade. They were good in the beginning, Mike, and then
well, you told me to sum it up, and I had to be blunt about
please,
it.
Please.
Yeah, but no, if it doesn't truly come from the heart, which is what we started at the top of the show,
yes,
is why I thought it was endearing and why I did continue to carry on even right. past the segment that I really enjoyed. But to your point, that if the filmmaker is not really in touch with the subject, it's going to come. You might be able to walk on water for a step or two, but eventually you're going to sink, and so will the audience.
Mm. Look at Elena. That's a quote from Elena. You might be able to walk for a step or two, but eventually you're going to sink. Elena Fulcrum. All right. So you know what? So on that note,
because you know I have an opinion.
Of course you do. I'm going to play the trailer and then we'll
come back to that.
Come back to Brian's opinion.
I want to hear what he had to say.
Well, it's a she.
Well,
you see,
I think that's the whole point of the whole thing.
You said he. You know why you said that, Brian? Because you're a chauvinist and you're a man.
But I was thinking along the way.
Yeah, the whole point of Mike.
Exactly.
The part I did listen that Mike said was about the whole.
That's right.
From the female perspective.
And Byron said he.
I did. I slipped with the tongue. Byron. I slipped with the tongue.
Mr. Liberal. Mr. Byron, I'm standing for everyone.
This is coming up at the meeting.
A slip of the tongue because at the point at which I was going to ask, what was your favorite director and screenwriter? Because mine is Nora Ephron, and I love her work. She knows how to tell a comic, romantic, relief story. And I like that genre a lot. And so at this particular piece, I like it.
Where was your boyfriend at the time of the attack?
How much did you have to drink?
Listen, these guys, they prey on drunk girls. Baby. Baby, look at me. What happened?
Sorry that I wasn't with you.
I know this is weird and uncomfortable, and I don't know what to say, but just try and be yourself, okay?
Sure.
Tell everyone it was a mugging, okay?
Did you think about it? What happened to me?
I don't expect you to get better right away.
Oh my God, get better? How about you let me decide how I feel? The world does not stop for you, okay? It keeps
spinning no matter what.
You can't remember anything.
I am not the one that is supposed to be on trial here. You're gonna kiss me again?
I'm dying to kiss you. I just don't want to hurt you.
I can handle it.
So, the film is written and directed by a filmmaker named Jessica Thompson. I did get a chance to talk to her about the film. Now, the film is not a perfect film by any means, but what I enjoyed about the film is that, like I said, there are a lot of attention to detail. The film basically takes place in that 6 weeks just after what happens to her. And a number of things stood out to me. The way the actual rape scene was filmed really stood out to me. I thought that was very powerful. And just lots of detail that, you know, could be, in most films, things are really portrayed in a different way. And if you're not really empathetic to this character, you might find it slow or uninteresting. But if you are tuned in, and I will say I didn't find the lead character, especially because we see most of her after what's happened. She's somewhat abrasive and somewhat unpleasant to people, but she's been through something. We're meeting this character in a post-traumatic stress situation. So I thought a lot of things about the film were good. Byron, I know you had an opinion you wanted to weigh in on since you've seen it.
Yes. Story-wise, I liked the ideal of the story. With respect to executing the story in a manner in which it would really play even better than what it's playing, I thought it could do some very... It would be enhanced by some good cuts and some moments which you really... Because it took time for it to get to the story. And I really understood it from beginning to end. But I just wish it got to the point a little sooner.
Well, I have to say, I like I said, I had some other issues with the film, but I disagree with you in that. I think that it's a very satisfying ending to the story, and it really did. It's a film that makes you think.
Oh, it but does.
Since Elena didn't see it, I don't want to talk about it too much because she can't really contribute. Yes. She's sitting here holding her tongue, going, "When will they shut up?" I can see she's got that "When will they shut up?"
I say that I look like that all the time.
I know you do. But I'm going to play an interesting an interview with the writer-director. Her name is Jessica M. Thompson. And I will say it's in theaters now. I think you support it. She's definitely a filmmaker.
Yes.
Who should continue to make films.
The message is strong. It really is. So that part I got.
I felt like I had not seen this story before, and I was getting extremely tired of seeing the same tropes being done and done again, usually by, you know, I love men, but, you know, usually by male writers and directors and cinematographers choosing to write and direct and shoot these scenes in certain ways and ignoring kind of the aftermath, like you said, or ignoring... or making it as an interesting backstory, but, you know, never kind of delved into. So, you know, it was a way to make a woman more complex or something like that. Like, a woman couldn't be complex without having that in her backstory. Or then using it as a rape revenge story, which is just so unrealistic. Even getting justice in the courts is so unrealistic for sexual assault survivors. So, and then when this happened to a friend of mine, I just felt compelled to tell the story. Like you said, I was like, I haven't seen this story, and I think it's way more interesting than the ones that were being spoon-fed, than the ones of the rape revenge in the courtroom dramas. I think seeing a woman, a strong, confident woman, who has this, like you said, 3 minutes of her life, change her whole life, and she's kind of in denial. The whole film is just the first 6 weeks after, and how she goes from denial to acceptance. That's all it is. It's just that first step towards a very long path of recovery. And I think that's why it's identifiable for many different people, because, you know, though it is about rape, I think we can all identify with Bonnie in terms of having trauma and taking that path towards acceptance and recovery, you know. So that was really largely my impetus, is that I wanted to tell this honest story that I hadn't seen before. And I'm proud to say that we are the only film to depict sexual assault that's written, directed, and cinematography by women.
One of the things that was really powerful was how you shot the rape scene, where it's a close-up on her face, and she goes from, you see her just wanting to not be there, but opening her eyes and realizing she is there, and sort of in disbelief, in shock. And it was more powerful than any scene I've ever seen like that. And you saw nothing but her face pressed against the concrete. And I'm just curious how you came to that. Was that something that was in the script? Did you work with the DP? You know, that to me was such a powerful moment, and I thought it was really just really well done.
Yeah, well, thank you. Yeah, so I definitely spoke about it a lot with Automique and the DP, but I mean, it was always in my mind that how can I show a rape scene and still and allow the audience to be in her mind and not from any other perspective. And I'm sure you probably noticed that Stephanie is literally in every single scene in the film. She's almost in every single frame of the film. And that's because it's her story, you know, and I've seen so many rape scenes that are shot from, you know, angles that just are not the way that we should be showing these kind of scenes. You know, they're almost sexualized or even shot from the perspective of a rapist, which I just, you know, why would we want to go into, why are we giving him the power? Why are we empathizing with him? So yeah, I really wanted to just, and I said to Autumn, I think we just need to do, you know, a slow zoom in on her face against the concrete. And then a lot of it will be in the sound design, as you heard. And from all of my research, you know, I spoke to a lot of rape survivors before I even started to write the film, and a lot of them said that there's this natural kind of flight or flight mechanism that takes over, and most people go into survival mode and take themselves out of their body. So whether this kind of concept, I think that we have also this false concept that, you know, a woman should fight back and things like that, it's often out of your control because your body will go into kind of like a shock mechanism. And most of the time what it does is it tries to pull you out of your mind just to cope with the next 3 minutes, just to survive, get through it. So that whole, you know, that sound design that you're talking about, pulling her out, making, we use a lot of under, you know, there's so many layers in there, and I worked a long time with a sound designer on that scene in particular, you know, pulling her like she feels like she's underwater. There's even like little submarine blips in there. There's, you know, worlds of like, you know, feeling like you're drowned and you're being, you know, you're suffocating. But you'll also notice that then she focuses on the light, the buzzing of the light or the buzzing of the air conditioner or something like that, you know, because that's also what I was told, is that these women will quite often just focus on one thing to try to just get themselves through that 3 minutes. And so I felt in terms of the sound design and the cinematography that it all had to be about her, you know, you don't even see his face. You know, it's all about her, and I wanted us to be in that experience in order to empathize with her for the rest of the story. And I went back and forth about whether to even show that scene, but I realized that it was important for us to be with her. You know, we're with her for every single step of this journey, so it was important to show it, I felt.
Along with the cinematography and the acting and the power of the story, I thought the sound design was tremendous in this film. And, you know, that underwater effect, you know, there's points in the film, without giving too much away, where, you know, she loses focus, or she's kind of, you know, there's that sort of post-traumatic stress thing where you kind of space out.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought the sound design really, really added to getting a sense of her perspective on the world and what it was like to China to try and fight through this while everybody is doing what they think they should do, not really getting where you are. So how long did you work on the sound design?
That was probably the longest part of the film, to be honest, because I normally would never recommend editing your own films, and I only edited this film because, you know, as most independent film stories go, we ran out of money. So I ended up editing the film, and, you know, I have 10 years of editing experience, so I knew it wasn't beyond me. But I do really relish and love that relationship between director and editor, and I was really looking forward to that. I really feel like in the edit room, your editor is, you know, your biggest confidant and your has the most objective opinion. So I really miss not having that objectivity, and as such, we had to have very many test screenings so that I could get honest feedback about the editing. But I edited it quite quickly in terms of, you know, in film terms. It only took me 2.5 months, which is very, very quick. But the sound design then took like 4 or 5 months because we wanted to get, you know, I worked with Darren a lot, and, you know, not every single day, but the sound design and the composition took quite a while because I had a very specific effect that I wanted to gain. And, you know, as you know, when you're shooting these scenes, quite often you take out all the sounds. You know, you try to, you know, for the sound recorders, they like to minimize any sound effects. So we add a lot of atmosphere in for just New York City to create that she was never alone. You know, I wanted us to feel claustrophobic. I wanted us to feel like, and that's how I feel sometimes in New York. I love this city, but sometimes I'm like, oh, the people, there's so many people. Like, can I just have a moment quiet, you know? And that's what I want. We slowly, I don't know if you noticed that, but like the sound effects build up over time. Where it's so to the point where she, you know, is arguing. You know, I won't actually ruin the story, so no, I won't spoil it. But you know, right. to the breaking point in the film, to the climax. I wanted this a cacophony of sounds, you know, of like dogs barking, people mumbling, footsteps. You know, and we have to add all that back in. You know, so that a lot of it, I'm glad that people don't notice. So things that you do notice are like the underwater effect and things like that. But a lot of the beauty, that richness, that kind of texture that's created is, you know, Darren Hallinan, our sound designer, did an incredible job at creating New York City around her. So yeah, it was very important to me. And one of the actors, Marcus Jor David, the lead actor, male actor, he just saw the film in full for the first time at the Woodstock Film Festival last weekend. And obviously he was there and he saw it firsthand, a lot of it. And he saw a very early, I think maybe the first rough cut, and he was like, wow. He was like, it's incredible. You know that there's a powerful thing that you're doing when you're an actor. And then when you finally see all those lovely little pieces that come together in movie magic and in post-production, it really can shape a story. And that's the part of storytelling that I really, you know, I love. My number one thing is working with actors, but there's something about the wonder of post-production and what you can achieve that really speaks to me.
That was an interview with Jessica Thompson, who's the writer-director of the new film, Light of the Moon. I'll tell you something else I liked about the film. There were a few things that were happening in the film and a few moments in the film that really moved me and that really struck a chord with me specifically. When we see her, you know, the first 5 minutes of the film, this is all I'll tell you. The first 5 minutes of the film, we see her. She's an architect. She works. She's doing very well. She's in a new firm. She's got a big job she's in charge of, and her boyfriend comes by to tell her, hey, I can't go to whatever we're supposed to go out, and I can't go. I got to, you know, his career, you know, I got to, you know, these people are coming in from out of town, blah, 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 blah. I'll be all there all night, blah, blah, blah. All right, and we also get that he does this a lot. So she goes, and she parties with her friends and drinks and probably drinks a little bit too much. And then they all, like, offer, oh, we'll walk you home. She doesn't live too far. She's like, no. Puts on her iPhones, her iPod, and her iPod. Nobody has an iPod. Puts on her iPhone and her headphones, and she's just going to bop home. Now, of course, for me, watching that, I really didn't know what the film was about. I didn't know it was about a rape. I just, you know, I pride myself on not knowing what a film is going to be about, and just watching and let the filmmaker tell me. But I got that sense of danger. As soon as she put it on, I was like, okay, you know, that's dangerous, you know, to do that. And it also occurred to me that, you know, it shouldn't be that way. It shouldn't be that way that you know, you can't just bop home if you're a woman late at night because, you know, you have to worry about, you know, this is part of what it is. A, to live in a big city. B, this is what men do. D, this is the times we live in. All those things. So it stayed with me. But it reminded me of the experience I had watching the movie Get Out earlier this year. When I watched Get Out had a scene in the beginning where one of the character, black character, ends up in a white neighborhood and he's looking around and some car drives by and then stops and then turns around and follows him and he's like, uh-oh, you know. And of course, you know, it does not go well. But as soon as he showed that and as soon as the guy turned around, as soon as he's, you know, the scenario of being a black guy in a white neighborhood late at night, I got it. I got the danger because it's happened to me where I had something happen that's, you know, was scary as a black man in a white neighborhood late at night. And right away I realized that this film was going to be redefining horror for me, you know, because it's a horror that, you know, you don't necessarily talk about, but it's as real as any horror scenario you've seen in any horror movie, you know? So I say all that to say that it brought me back to making me realize certain realities that exist for a woman that, you know, that don't exist for a man, generally. Not to say that men don't get mugged by men, but in general, you know, myself or Byron is going to be a lot safer walking down the street than Elena. Even though Elena is a superhero and everything. So.
That's right.
I appreciated some of the subtleties in that film. I know Byron felt that there were a few things that hit too heavy and too on the nose, but I definitely appreciated certain things that worked for me in the film. There it is, Byron.
Yes, and I think the film could have been better had it been edited better. Because I really got this.
Objectivity then.
Yeah,
like another,
no, and truly.
Like
and
what
I,
she said. She said
and
that.
What she's, and so, I mean, I'm okay with that because I wanted to go with it. But with respect to what she showed me some very good stuff.
And what about Elena? Elena, you got anything to say about
and
anything I said?
I will say that. She showed very good stuff.
Elena, I know you didn't see the movie. You have any feelings
right, but
as a
no,
woman about anything?
To your the point that you just made, though, I don't necessarily think that... I mean, it, again, it's individual situations and in terms of the individual...
You're Elena, so we expect you to have some bizarre opinion.
But to your point, that where I would be in more danger because I was a white, you know,
no, not just
a white
just
female.
Just a woman, just
or
a female.
Just a female, but I think sometimes that can be actually instill a falsity of self-confidence and actually fear.
What can?
Being a woman. Mm. I think
so
that
you feel more confident as a woman? You can kick Bard's ass, that kind of thing?
I think that instills not even if it doesn't like I don't.
It what's it? What instills this?
That fear of me.
Why would she have to kick my ass?
Because you know it's my story. Okay?
What storyline?
There's a storyline where Elena kicks your ass. I want to see
Elena.
It.
With all due respect, why am I?
We'll get a lot of hits for that. We'll get a lot of hits for that. We'll get a lot of hits. A lot of hits.
No, stop.
Pun intended.
I want an instant.
Byron, let Elena finish her story.
No, the fear of a woman. And Mike, you and I had discussed this on...
discussed the fear of a woman?
No, the fear of a woman... Where a woman can actually have a step up above a man and not even... Just an African American man in a white neighborhood, a man, you know, maybe even a Caucasian man, dressed in like jeans and like walking around, people like are apprehensive, and so is that male. So sometimes I think it's almost empowering to be a white woman, or even a black woman, but mostly for a white woman because I think we are like, you know.
So you feel empowered? You feel empowered?
We are like a calf. We can sometimes walk down any dark, lonely street.
Like a calf?
Like a calf with anthrax. Nobody wants to touch them.
Elena, that is a unique and in singular view. That's all I'm going to say.
Okay.
No one wants to touch that white woman coming down the thing. She's trouble. Just, you know, coddle her.
No one wants to touch that white woman coming down the road.
So you will appease her. You will kowtow to her. And that can happen.
Do you think that this is everybody's thought or just yours?
I don't think it's in every situation. I think this is a scenario that does occur.
Wow, Elena.
That I can
imagine if you did drugs. That's my always make my question in my mind. Like I go, wow, what if Elena
my hair would be straighter?
Byron.
My opinion is
that's not an opinion, Byron.
It's true.
But do you know how many streets I can walk down and I can name you numerous?
And where you're empowered.
We would need a whole nother show.
I hope, you know, Byron.
I don't need to wear, you know.
You really don't even have to comment on some of the things Elena says because they.
I don't even need
affirmations.
They speak for themselves.
Hello.
Elena Fulgham.
Do not touch me.
I need to patent you.
She's Elena.
Yeah, you should have a YouTube channel, Elena. You'd be controversial. You'd be like, you'd have more viewers than I'm Woa Vicky.
The more friends that I actually have? Okay.
Surprise.
And you're tuned to Listen Sponsored Radio, WBAI. 99.5 FM. The name of the show.
Night Shift.
The time now is 1:48.
And what's that phone number again?
You know where you are.
Night Shift.
That's 347-335-0818.
Night Shift. Pick up the phone. Give us a call. You'll be surprised.
We'd love to hear from you.
Get it all. Night Shift. It's my favorite show.
I'm on the air.
You're on the air.
Well,
yes,
thank you.
Yes. Who are you?
My Facebook friend.
Are you Facebook friends with us?
No, with you.
With me? Okay.
In terms of Elena, I think what Elena just said was right on.
Mm.
Uh-huh. Mm.
I think it is, how would you say, it's kind of not mystical. It's
mystical.
It's troubling mystical. In a way, but it's so true. It is a wild thing she's just said, and I don't think you guys understood it.
I understood it. I'm just trying to grapple with it. No, I don't berate you, Riley. Mm-hmm. I'd give you
someone who's supposed to be the most delicate.
He's actually the most powerful.
Sort of like in the King Kong movies, the Tarzan movie.
In what's her name's movie, Oprah's movie, where that white old woman takes Oprah back to her to visit for a quick visit to her family after the Color Purple, I think was the name, and all those, and the woman was so scared, but the men around her, well, I'm not sure if she was scared, but the men around her, black men, big black men, were paralyzed with fear. Of course, all she had to do was just scream.
All she had to do was scream. The sanctity and power of the white woman. Elena.
Well, it's power and then it's not. It's just what it is.
It's not. It's power. I like that. Yeah. I like that.
It is what it is. It's not. He's trying to
make
Elena,
that's a t-shirt. White woman. It is what it is.
No, but it's not the color. And that's the point he's trying to make. That's why he uses it.
You said it's not the color, though?
It is a color.
The color does give you an extra
Elena,
layer.
White women means women who are white, not women of all colors, just so you know.
I kind of realized that last year.
I think only someone crazy would do something to her. totally
only someone crazy would do something to her.
Someone who doesn't know consequences.
A later fool.
Exactly, no consequences.
She can be an
yes, I do have one more bracelet, like Wonder Woman.
But thank you, Elena. That was something that set me thinking. Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
So listen, Elena will always set you thinking. Sometimes, if you try and figure her out, you will go mad.
I'd turn back if I were you.
She puts up with you guys, all the little boys.
I know.
All right, so wait, Len, question
for you. They're so evil to me.
Question for you. What's your name, sir? What do you call yourself?
My name is Orville. I should have given you a fake name.
All right, Orville is a good
Orville. Fake name.
Orville.
We can pass that off as fake.
Faking neighbor. Right. Orville faking neighbor. Orville. All right, Bill. But here's my Orville faking neighbor. All right, but here's my question, brothers? Orville. Yes. If you were going to be a superhero, yes. A, what would be your superhero name? And B, what would be your power?
Give me a second. Let me just turn this radio off.
That's right. You're hearing us in the future.
Please?
The question is, if you were going to be a superhero, what would your superhero name be, and what would your power be?
Come on, Orville, this is not Jeopardy.
What would my superhero name and power be?
Yes. I'm feeling it. Come on, just put it out there. You don't have to be ashamed of what you want to be. What is it?
She assumes it's something shameful. All right, toilet paper man, all right? I'm sorry, go ahead.
We're just
it would be to
you.
Make people think at the moment.
Okay.
Interesting power.
Yes, power to make people think.
Even Elena, she would have to think with your powers.
Well, Elena thinks. She has to think around you guys. She's frustrated a lot.
No,
of course. We listen. We keep Elena on her toes. You know what she would be?
These guys.
She listen. You know how everything in your brain when you learn something, it creates convolutions. If not for us, Elena would have a smooth brain.
Smooth brain. What does that mean?
Well.
So I would be shaved. No. Is what you're saying? I would have a shaved.
No.
I would be all natural.
All natural.
Actually,
exactly.
Maybe that would be my name. All natural. I'd stop and make people
super
think.
Super Shiro. All natural.
All natural.
Like that. Super Shiro. All natural. I'd like that, Elena.
No. That's his name, not her. Don't give it to her.
Oh.
We're giving away his
not
name.
Not me.
He's all natural.
He can't be Super Nero.
No, he's au natural. You know?
Oh, he's
au natural.
Natural.
He's a French Canadian.
Yeah, I just like that for a moment. Because
au natural.
And think deeply about, just so introspectively, just so thoroughly about the little stupid, wild things we do and say.
Mm.
From Trump to Clinton to everybody, to your next door neighbor, to yourself sometimes.
To Elena,
just
especially.
To make you think.
Well, let me ask you, Orville.
What are we doing?
Would you consider that to be a stand-up comic routine?
What?
That would be a profound superpower.
That would be a profound.
It's
see,
a profound
think about
superpower.
Think about it. You come to the mic. You got the mic.
Right.
You give your routine. And you throw the mic down afterwards, and everybody just
you
goes.
Throw the mic down afterwards.
Goes bonkers.
All right. That's your fantasy.
No.
But Orville.
He just comes out. He comes out. I'm Byron Saunders.
No. Trust me. I do.
The crowd
needs to
the crowd
that.
Goes wild.
Crowd goes wild.
Byron drops the mic. Crowd goes wild.
No, it's just not
possible.
I doubt
it, but
yeah, I doubt it too.
It
seriously.
Could be. It could be. It could be.
No, no, why? Know, why could it?
Don't
be?
Don't step on his dream.
I'm not.
But Orville, you would have
that.
To be really careful with that power.
I
sometimes
don't want
you
that power.
You could drive man or woman into a state of madness,
and it would be your fault.
Exactly. And you know why? You know why Elena says that?
Because it's happened to me.
How so, Elena?
Night shift. We just increase the dosage and you get better as time goes on. Night shift.
Well, how so, Elena?
Sometimes if you overthink, then you overthink it to, like, quicksand. And then you just keep drowning and drowning and you don't trust one...
Why do you say overthink? I didn't mean overthink.
Well...
Elena meant overthink.
Right. That's what I mean. See, you don't... your power
listen,
is so great.
Listen, when you say think,
then you Elena, might not necessarily. Elena, instantly, that's what you have to understand.
Elena has the unique, one of her superpowers is to be the ability to take things to the worst possible scenario. That's one of her, yeah, she can do that instantly.
We call that the overthink power.
No, that's, yes, the overdrive. Overdrive. Overthink, overthink, overdrive, yes.
Overthink, overdrive.
Overdue.
Elena, what is this movie that we're talking about, that he's talking about, in terms of rape, what is it really, besides a physical, a psychic, it's what is that?
Wow.
In terms of what it does to
a person. Can I just pause for a second to say, that night when a listener called and asked Elena, what is rape? Go ahead, Elena, please.
Well, she's the only one who hasn't seen the movie.
No, that's okay, but I want to understand. I want to hear her answer, and don't say, God damn thing.
To me, rape would be something that I should not speak about explicitly, because thank God and or whoever you believe in that it has not happened to me. But for those I know who have experienced such a travesty and you know, the utmost, rape is, you know, a noun that can be applicable to not just the physical, which is, I from what I understand from these gentlemen like giving the review, to hearing the director herself, but it's not, it is so much more. To my understanding, believe me, I'm speaking from non-experience, so anybody can shoot me down and I'll take the bullet. But if from my understanding, if your mind is warped,
yes,
and your heart is warped, I think that's the most important thing.
Your heart is warped.
Because then your trust in any sort of partner, male or female, you know, even your children or your
God,
your,
the world.
You know, your mother, your father, all are going, all put into immediate a tempest of doom, potential doom.
Utility.
So any relationship you have, again, a potential tempest of doom, and to, you know, forgo that into some happy ending is not going to happen for that individual anymore. It's no longer in the cards for them, ever.
Mm-hmm.
So it's
shattering.
Right, it's the ultimate unhappy ending. So you have
tempest of doom. Okay,
so rape is rape, no matter the gender.
No, well, it's, you know, rape. Don't put words in her mouth. No,
she reinterprets
Elena. Don't mansplain it to her.
She said it very eloquently, in a stated manner that brings it down to the zero factor, because you got to call it what it really is. No matter what the
gender. It is just such a wild thing to think about that someone would do that to another person.
Well, you know, first of all, you can't commit inhumane acts to another human if you see them as human. And rape is clearly not a crime of passion. It's a crime of power.
Well, it might be a crime of passion.
I don't think so. It's not about a passion. Fantastic. Maybe a passion for power. That's possible.
And
insanity. Byron Saunders.
Yes.
Elena Fulgham.
Yes.
You're tuned to Listener Sponsored Radio. We have an hour
thank
left.
Thank you, folks.
Thank you, Orville.
Thank you, Orville.
Yeah, it's great. Have a blessed day.
Have a wonderful day.
The phone number here is 347-335-0818. You are tuned to Listener Sponsored Radio. Byron song is.
Wow.
Did you like that track?
Were you with that? GM, baby.
Were you with that, Byron?
Oh, my goodness. That was spectacular, Mike Sargent. Thank you for that, DGM. I really do appreciate that.
You have a story, Byron.
Do I have a story? Do you know, on this show, life truly is like science fiction. Okay, I have an alien rock, could be first confirmed object.
Alien rock?
From outside our solar system.
Alien rock?
From outside our solar
alien
system.
Alien rock. Okay, this is life is like science fiction. Talk to me.
All right.
Why do we have this? Why do we keep it?
Because this
blasted back into space.
400-meter object has an unusual orbit.
400 meters?
Scientists say.
Wait a minute. How long is a meter? Like 6 feet or 3 feet?
Close to 3 feet long.
So, 400 meters.
Yes.
That's like almost 1,000 feet.
Yes.
That's pretty big.
You think?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's like an alien planet.
That's what they're saying, is that the unusual orbit that scientists say could only have come from beyond our neighborhood. All right. A small asteroid or comet is believed to be the first confirmed interstellar object to have entered our solar system from somewhere else in the galaxy. You see, moving between stars and occasionally passing through other solar systems, it is something scientists have long believed to exist. This is the first such detection, said Paul Chodas, head of the Center for Near-Earth Object Studies. We have been...
The Wait. Center for Near Earth
yes,
Object
you heard
Studies.
It right here on this show.
That's
right
the NE.
Yes.
OS.
Something to that effect. We have been waiting for this day for decades. He said that while everything so far indicated that object was from outside the solar system, more data would be needed to confirm it. So the asteroid or comet
Alien
about
rock.
400 meters in diameter and speeding at 27 miles per second is thought to have entered our solar system on 2 September. So it's already been through our solar system. It's entered the solar system as it travels. But I found this story.
It's on its way to us.
Yeah, it's been here. But the thing that's really amazing is, so when you see its orbit and how it orbits around the sun is what's really phenomenal. Now, they didn't really talk about it in this article, because I've read this article before, and what I really wanted to know more about was the dynamics of the elliptical orbit that this kind of planet, not comet, but planet.
Elliptical alien rock.
That just right, orbit. That just 400 meters wide, that just happens to do this amazing orbit around our sun. Through our universe.
Maybe it's really a spaceship inside.
Okay.
They're here to collect the later.
Okay. So this is why it's important. It then made its closest approach to the sun 7 days later before taking a hairpin turn and passing through 15 million miles under Earth's orbit on 14th of October. So it's already come past us and come into our solar system, but the elliptical orbit that it is taking is incredible. Any event, astronomers are urgently tracking the object to try to know more about its origin and composition. It has the most extreme orbit that NASA...
How do you urgently track?
Because it's... thank you.
You skip lunch.
What's happening?
The Hubble telescope tells us a lot about what's out there. So I think the Hubble telescope has something to report about this particular phenomenon.
Mm.
He said it was going extremely fast and on such a trajectory that it is clearly on its way out of the solar system and not coming back. But by looking more closely at the route or the route, the NASA team worked out more that it had come from the direction of the constellation of Lyra. We have long suspected that these objects should exist because during the process of planet formation, a lot of material should be ejected from planetary systems.
Like so, a Jack Kirby drawing.
Right, so said Karen Meach from the Institute of Astronomy. See, what's most surprising is that we've never seen interstellar objects pass through before. The first to realize something was unusual about the object was Rob Weick at the University of Hawaii. Now, he's realized it came from the beyond after cross-checking images taken from the Canary Islands. And the team that then figured out its provenance by observing its orbit. And it goes by the less than catchy theme name of A/2017.
There's a point where Elena's glazing over.
But this might change because rules for naming
such an object. I thought this is about a rock. What happened?
Not been decided. Well, it's about a rock. 1700 glaze
factor.
But look at this, Elena. Look at the trajectory of its known.
Look at those ellipses, Elena.
Yes, I see. It's a pretty picture.
Yes, it's a pretty picture. But see how this planet,
Elena,
once it got to our sun,
Shiro,
made a huge left turn.
But didn't you just say it's leaving anyway?
Well, yes, but will it collide with anything? You know, there's a lot of collusion out there.
Well, you said there's nothing out there.
A lot of collusion out there. The Republican
could easily
hit somebody. The Democratic rock.
Thank you. The collusion effort, it's in.
And
y'all.
Then what would we have?
That's right.
Planetary
collusion.
There's a lot out there.
Particles.
You gotta watch out for that colliding.
Collusion.
Stop it.
Collusion.
I like
Sarah. Eric Serra.
G.
That was from the soundtrack to Subway, an early Luc Besson.
That
film.
Was very good.
Yes, it was.
That kind of reminded me. Is that going to be like a new release version of a John Huston movie? Yes.
John Huston or John Hughes?
Yeah, John Hughes. Okay. No, Huston. No, like the Breakfast Club kind of.
That's John Hughes. Yeah, John Hughes. Not Huston. Yusuf's very, he's like Casablanca, very different. But anyway, okay, interesting. Yeah, that actually did sound kind of like that 80s kind of, yeah. Well, it was from, that soundtrack's from the 80s, and that was kind of the music. It definitely, you're right, it does sound like a John Hughes soundtrack.
Byron?
Yes, Mike.
Were you a fan of Don, John?
Yes.
What's your favorite John Hughes movie?
Oh, name them, because I at this moment.
Elena, what's your favorite John Hughes
movie? Name some of the movies. I can tell you if I really, really liked them. What's your favorite? I know who he is, by the way. It's just the moment I can't call.
Whatever, Byron, whatever.
Elena. Breakfast Club, I think.
Breakfast Club is your favorite?
Mm.
Really?
I don't know, my favorite.
You liked it better. Yeah, well, that's the classic. You like it better than 60 Candles or...
I'm a Molly Ringwald fan.
Are you?
Yes.
Breakfast Club was more in touch with, like, it really, I understood where they were coming from.
Like?
16 Candles was just simply funny.
It was funny.
Okay.
True. I'm with you. But I like both of them. I like them. I'm a fan.
Hello, you're in the air.
Hello. How are you guys doing tonight?
All right. Who's this? What's your name?
Kenny from the Bronx.
Kenny from the Bronx.
Kenny from the Bronx. Baby.
So now, two questions. One, why are you up this late, Kenny?
I call you. I keep telling you every time I call. I drive at night.
Ah.
And down through Brooklyn.
Ah. Okay. You drive by night.
BQE.
They drive by night, Byron.
Yeah, she's out there.
Avenue, Atlantic.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. You know, all over.
All right. And then, have I asked you this before? Why do you listen to the show?
Yeah, you always ask me that.
Well, you always ask me that.
I need to know.
Because Mike is so in shock that anyone's listening to the show.
I like the show. I like you guys together. You and Byron. And, the mystery caller, not Elena. I don't know what
to
call all the time.
No, well, Elena's a mystery herself.
That's true.
But now, my question to you is, if you were a superhero, what would your superhero name be? And what would be your power?
Okay, boy, before I answer, because I want to know, what was the other guy's answer? You know, Mr. Redenbacher.
His answer, he was, what was his answer, Byron? He was something. He was going to do something. He's going to make people think. Something or the other. He was going to think.
Exactly. Make people think.
People think. Okay.
His superpowers.
That was his superpower. They're going to think, and then they're going to buy popcorn. No, I don't know what he said. Something.
Because, see, you have to understand, with Orville being the first one, we got to go popcorn.
Exactly. Yeah, Redenbacher, he's going to make you some popcorn.
Exactly. You're going to think about it, then you're going to buy my popcorn.
Right.
Extra butter. Because you know it's not butter, but you're going to buy it anyway.
I don't make this stuff. I just write it.
Yeah, Byron, you got to bleep yourself out there.
7 seconds away.
Yes.
If I was a superhero, my name would be The Wiz.
I would have
infinite wisdom.
The Wiz,
because you're gonna have infinite wisdom. I'm with that. I'm with that.
Excuse me.
None of that Richard Pryor jazz. I'll be the real Wiz.
All right.
Would you have a cape?
Maybe in the boogie down.
Would you have a cape, Mr. Wiz?
Would you have a cape?
I'll have a cape and a bow tie. You ever seen that guy in the commercials? The late night commercials.
And a bow tie.
Matthew Lesko. Whoa. He had the question marks a little bit too. He wanted you to buy his book. He had all these question marks like he was a Riddler.
No, I didn't see him. But that's how you dress.
Yeah. But that doesn't mean I'll have question marks all over my green suit, like the Riddler. But I have a bow tie and a cape.
I like that. You got the costume happening too. I'm with you. You're like, and then it's not canary yellow. It's banana yellow.
Because the cape would be a cloaking device.
Of course it is.
Yeah, with a cape, a man never has to shave his back.
They have it now. The cape is a cloaking. They have clothing that is.
You don't have to shave your back.
That's why men wear capes.
Yeah.
Let me ask a question. Why would Elena entertain that question from Redenbacher. Why would she do that? Because he could be the rapist. That's
this
why he's
is
asking.
True. Well, he could be. He might be. But Elena, listen to me. Elena has powers. Elena knows they ain't nobody going to touch that. That's Elena's powers, ain't nobody going to touch that.
Okay, so now this is another question.
Yes.
When she said no, she would have that type of power where she walked down the street and no one would want to touch that. That's not a street in New York, right?
No, no, no. She already has that power. So she didn't even think
that's what I'm saying.
She already got that power.
But it's like kryptonite.
Yes, she lives in New York. She lives in New York, of course.
No. What street? Because I've been up all the time.
First of all, are you a white woman? No.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah,
so
I
you
am.
Cannot
I
understand
am.
The power.
The power of the white woman.
You cannot understand.
The
Elena
power
knows.
Of Elena.
I'm actually giving you gentlemen, you know, looking glass into my power.
Right. There it is. She's letting us glimpse her power.
Man, listen, I would love to walk with her down the street.
That's right. She'll protect you. Elena will protect you.
Maybe we can walk down the street with her.
That's right. That's right. She's protect. Listen to me. Elena is protection. I've gotten out of
point
stuff
well
because
said.
Of Elena. That's right.
Welcome to
and when you say she's special, do you mean like riding a little yellow bus or special as...
That's open to interpretation.
I'm a chameleon of short bus versus genius.
Exactly. She's like the Zelig of the disabled.
They should be happy for me. I can just walk up and down. Here I am, white. Don't hurt me.
I never met a woman like that, you know, walking down the street. She usually has that power to jump across the street.
You'll never meet a woman like Elena. I can guarantee that for you.
She's special, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's special. Extra, exactly. Like Byron said, extra special.
Extra special.
She comes with her own sauce. Just add water.
Oh, wait, don't add water. Something happened.
Just add water, makes her own sauce.
You know what kind of sauce that is? Woo, Elena sauce. Yeah.
Elena sauce.
Yeah, listen, the last time I spoke to you guys, that's how I was going to pledge. I pledged it wasn't even there.
Oh, wow, you pledged without us here? See, you know, that's loyal. We appreciate that.
Thank you so much.
See, you pulled the superhero... Invisibility.
Yes, we do.
That's right.
Occasionally, we have to.
But our power is so strong, almost as strong as that of the white woman.
Ours
we can
is,
make you pledge.
Ours is the cloak of goodness. See, the cloak of goodness realms supreme.
You know what?
What?
You know what? Elena is so good. I think she needs to have her own breakfast cereal.
Listen,
I think so too. I agree.
She could be. You know, Elena O's.
I can put my sweet juice on the cover of a box
sweet
of
juice.
Cereal.
On the cover.
Sweet juice.
We don't even know what that is. That's a special. That's a second flavor.
I want some sweet juice, baby.
Elena O's with sweet juice.
Elena O's.
With sweet juice.
I'm fortified with 7 nutrients.
Exactly. Fortified.
It wouldn't be Elena anymore. It'd be Elena O.
Elena O.
Elena.
And people would call out my name as I crossed that street. Elena! Elena!
Elena!
Elena!
I know you, Elena!
Where are you living at the time?
In Elenaville.
Elenaville.
Exactly.
I like that.
is that near Townsville? The little girls, the Powerpuff Girls live?
Exactly. It's right next door. Yeah. It's the capital of Townsville.
Yeah, in the county.
Good night.
All right.
All right.
Yeah,
thanks, man.
Just so you know, I'll be your Elena Cabbage Patch doll.
There you go. Good night, guys.
Good night.
So good. This is to that OJ documentary. I'm going to be interviewing the composer because I love him. He's so good.
Okay.
So good. So good.
Bart Saunders.
Mike Sargent.
This is also
talk
from
to
the
me. Talk to me.
But this is we're going to start to compress time.
Are we? Wait a minute. Hold on.
Elena has a
story.
Are
we about to compress some time?
About to compress time. It is now.
Okay. Let me have it.
Like a minimizer bra.
Compress,
yeah.
Compress me.
It
baby.
Is now 2:25.
I want to be compressed.
We will now turn 35 minutes into 70.
Into nothing.
Go ahead, Elena.
Compress. Just like that rock circling the earth.
Compress me, baby.
Go ahead, Elena.
Pole dancing could become an Olympic event. We want gold medals, said International Pole Sports Federation leader Kate Coates as pole dancing.
International Pole Sports Federation leader.
As pole dancing is made an
is
official
that on her card?
Stort. Stort. I just said stort.
Yes, it is.
It's an official stort.
Exactly. It's, Dr. Zeus wrote this stort.
It's so Police. Long, it
the stort
the back of the card.
Would pole dance.
Well, if it's pole dancing, it might be a stort.
Every May.
Pole dancing has officially been recognized as a sport, and organizers are hoping we could one day be seeing the acrobatic moves as the in the Olympics.
Yes, it'll be Why? Banned, though, in certain countries.
Why do we have to see that move?
Because again? We need to see that, Byron. This is the world we're heading into. Where's my Charlton Heston soundbite?
Oh, no, Mr. Bill. Along with dodgeball and arm wrestling, it has been awarded observer status by the Global Association of International Sports Federations. This means organizers will be given help to become compliant with World Anti-Doping Agency rules and towards receiving that required recognition from national Olympic committees. It comes following an 11-year campaign by the International Pole Sports Federation. There's a Pole Sports Federation.
Wait a minute. Excuse me. I'm just waking up, but I just heard this, and I just want to ask a question.
Okay. I knew that would get y'all.
International Pole Sports Federation, that's right.
I have a question to ask about this.
It's the IPFL.
Are there drug rules for pole dancing? If I'm not mistaken, I thought
the
I heard there's a regulation.
Stop.
Against
ignore him.
Taking
and
a
finish your story.
There is. There is. Yes. You woke up just at that point.
I'm just trying to make clearance out of all of this.
We've been given interim recognition, which is fantastic. Fantastic for our sport. Fantastic for our athletes. And fantastic for our community, she said. And we want
community. That word comes back again.
It's just simply fantastic.
Excuse me. I heard about five or six fantastic, so I don't know about.
And that was
community.
In one quote.
Elena feels it's quote. Fantastic.
So
basically.
I'm like, come on with
it's
the.
It's not from me.
Show me your fantastic, baby. I want to know.
Has got her pole
dish.
She's going to join the Olympics this
Thank
year.
You. I want to know if I need to start pole.
Of course
training.
You do. Listen.
I
want
to train to be
train.
A pole trained. I'll be a pole trained by being pole trained. I'll be a pole trained.
Byron.
Yes.
Brian needs a pole somewhere.
Exactly.
In yeah. some sort of orifice, and we all know which it is.
Ooh, Elena. Elena just jumps on in there, Brian.
Don't interrupt.
I'm sorry. As you were saying.
Ass of the sport could be judged as part of gymnastics.
Did you say ass of the sport?
Ooh, is that a Freudian slip? Asked if the sport could be judged as part of gymnastics, Ms. Coates said she wanted to compete in her own right. In the last 6 years, pole dancing has had an 82% increase in male participation, according to Pole Sports UK.
Pole Sports UK. That's a magazine, Byron. You have to get a subscription. Pole Sports UK.
Pole dancing.
UK suggests that there are other countries.
Pole dancing in the.
I would see that. Pole to pole?
In European markets. So is this a professional sport?
Pole to pole. That would be interesting for the females.
Is that what you're telling us, Elena? This is a professional sport?
That's yes.
Not only is it a professional sport, Byron, it's about to become an Olympic sport.
Wait a minute. Male pole dancing will become
just
an
pole
Olympic
dancing.
Sport?
Period. You can
pole dancing.
Excuse me. She's saying this is male oriented at this point.
It has
it's
now
not male oriented. It is expanded.
That's not the point of the story. The point is, as Mike just stated, it's becoming an Olympic sport.
Thank
is
you.
What they're trying to, you know,
Byron's
achieve.
Who will be the best
An interesting side note is now there's... Okay. The president, Patrick Bowman, said the Olympics could be in reach. We warmly recommend our first observers. He said this is an exciting time for them and for us, and we will do everything within our remit to help them realize their full potential as international federations within the global sports family, and one day maybe become part of the Olympic program.
Anything can evolve.
The new sports debuting at Tokyo 2020 and at the Buenos Aires Youth Olympics are evidence
pole
that the pathway is there.
An Olympic sport.
Wow.
They had synchronized swimming.
Well, that's obviously, it's almost close to the same thing, right?
Yeah, but pole dancing.
Wait, hold on. You asked me to go along with synchronized swimming, and I went with it because I think it was like, okay, it's artistic, it's choreography.
Did they ask you, Byron? They were like,
they kind of forced it down my throat.
The community is like, beep, 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 beep.
We're thinking
Byron,
of including this.
Would you allow...
Byron, we need to ask you.
Would you allow synchronized swimming in the Olympic program?
We're thinking of asking you.
And then the one with the hula hoop. Come on, y'all. Okay.
And Byron, did they call you on your special red phone?
I don't even matter. It doesn't even matter anymore.
They asked
me. The beep, beep, beep on the red phone, but now, come on, y'all. The hula hoop routine, I've seen it. I've loved it. I could do it as a child, but they've taken it to a new limit. And
you
then, come on, stop.
Child.
Stop it. Stop it. The ribbons. If you're going to do the ribbons, y'all. How graceful the ribbons are as they float across the sky as you do that routine again. Can you do that? That's a 5.8 right there. Oh, yeah. One more ribbon. Flutter. The Olympics are coming down to the point where it's Wussyville. You don't get a chance to run the 100-yard dash. Now you can flutter a ribbon and get a gold medal.
Talk about the Russians have been doping for years.
Well, I'd rather have the Russians on the field of honor. In an Olympic sport, let them dope up. We're gonna beat this rope of dope.
No, it's not. You can't beat the dope.
Yes, you can.
Doping.
You can beat the dopes every time. Because then why would you call them dopes?
Beat the dopes. You should get them out.
Why
here.
Would you call them dopes
because
if you can't beat them?
The doping
dopes no. get beaten.
First of all, they're doping, and it's a serious thing. You're a foolish man. Mr.
Well, I'm just calling it out for what it is. You said the dopers are dope. The dopey people are doing dopey things, right? Elena, I rest my case. Why do we have to give dopey people the dopey credit?
I'm actually in shock that you're actually taking something aside that I would actually agree with.
Thank you, Elena. See, Elena, on this day.
I mean, you're like, let the dopers dope. Who cares? They're gonna die anyway. Let's keep going. Compete. So if you want to like have like a sideway out, but I can't believe what I'm seeing. It's impossible. But yeah. I can't believe what I'm seeing. It's impossible. I can't believe what I'm seeing. It's impossible. I can't believe what I'm seeing.
Senior Mike, I have a story. I have a story about marijuana. A story that you need to listen to, Senior Mike. Cops find 97 pounds of pot in plain sight and nearly $1 million in cash after a tenant freely invites them into suspect's apartment in Brooklyn. Did you hear what I just said? $1 million in cash. 97 pounds of pot in Brooklyn.
What did you say, Olivia?
We heard it. Move on.
The New York police... It was some good stuff. 97 police discovered 97 pounds of marijuana and nearly $1 million in cash in a Brooklyn apartment after being cell. Officers uncovered the hall after being asked to help them search for a wanted person believed to be unlocked, or when they knocked on the apartment door where they believed police were shocked to see large amounts of drugs stored in plain sight. Drugs on that table. Police said a different man answered the door and invited the sizable stash in plain view. Oh, boy. Officers immediately arrested the man with him.
Damn.
Yeah. Search warrant. They had a search warrant. They discovered more cannabis and cash stashed throughout the home. In total, they seized $931,000 and nearly 100 pounds of cannabis. I guess that's a cannabis of all kinds, because they're not just sticking with
right. The
grass or the, you know, the typical. This is some...
We're talking quality stuff.
Quality stuff, my goodness. Apartment residents Humphrey Olivio, 36, and Yasmin Olivio, 30, were charged with criminal possession, criminal sale, and criminal use of marijuana. While Jose Picardo, 28, who was inside the apartment at the time, was given a criminal use of drug paraphernalia charge, along with
use of drug paraphernalia.
Yeah, he had
non-criminal use of drug paraphernalia?
I don't know. I think they made up a story here. Along with criminal possessions and sale of marijuana. So they did bust him with sale of marijuana. It has not been reported whether Jersey City police have found the person they were looking for. Wait a minute, they just found the stash. They didn't find the person.
So they went in there looking for somebody, and they're like, oh,
and
snap.
And I was like, oops, we found the stash here, y'all.
We can make this bust.
We don't know who lives here, but that's our
eminent domain.
Well,
I wonder if this stuff got to the evidence room. This is looks like a lot of stuff here, okay?
Why aren't they giving that money to the poor?
Right, hello. Anyway, New York report, they were wanted on arson and terror... threat. Wait a minute. I'm reading a marijuana story. These guys are arrested on arson and terror charges.
Keep it going, my brother.
What? Excuse me.
You're at the finish line. Go, go,
no,
go.
That's it. That's all they give me. That's it. I'm like, wait a minute. You can't leave me hanging like that. Mike.
So little and yet so nothing.
What's going on? This sounds like trumped up charges. Is this fake news?
What is fake news?
I'm trying to understand and comprehend just what we just read, because basically I'm looking at a table filled with cash and drugs and drug paraphernalia. There were three charges that he had a pack of bamboos on him. Okay, come on,
what bamboo?
Come with me. Get first. That you roll your stuff in.
Well, that's rock
paraphernalia. Yeah, Jeff paraphernalia. I'm okay. Trying to get what Bob was. He was holding a good amount of some really good stuff. And he's getting charged with not just possession, but distribution, too.
Well, they're helping to roll him.
And he's got cash on the table, $100,000 on the table.
Good $991.
See? And, of course, they got a... a weight unit thing, so you can weigh what metric or tonnage, a bill counter, your $100 after money. They got one of those.
It's like a turnkey business if you buy
it. It sounds like any event. This is what you. But yes.
Are we in warp time?
Next question for you. Mr. Mike Sargent, you know this weekend we had a very serious incident, another one, down there in Texas. Well, on this, sir, as I mean, I don't want to take a lot of time, but I mean, right now, do you see the consistent with a pattern of how things are happening, or are you just, tell me what you think.
What's that, Martin? You should say it.
Okay. Here's what I really want to be quick, because it's real easy, simple. This was a town of just 400 people or less. By the time the carnage ended, over 11% of the population were injured. That's a lot of people, yo. And if violence with a gun can bring this much destruction, whether mass destruction, but destruction, over 11% of this small by a gun violence. Now, whether you want to admit that there are too many guns or not, me, this is like a dropping atomic bomb in a town that only had 400 people. And if you can't find common sense solutions to having too many guns, because the next question I want to ask is, towns where people were armed, I want to know how many people own guns, and I want to know how many people, how many guns, because I think there's the ratio mathematically will tell us that this is a disaster. Being in a bomb in Hiroshima, you had over 11% of this population affected by a violence and a virus. Stop that. What if it were a bigger weapon of mass destruction? And the response we can get is there's too much mental disorder information, if not. I stop right there because I don't want to go beyond, but the statistics are telling me it's not just mental. Perhaps over 11% of the town just lost or were hurt by gun violence.
Did that take you somewhere?
Inside my shrine.
You have a shrine?
Yes.
What kind of shrine? Ode to me, ode shrine. Elena's ode to herself.
Ode to Elena O.
Oh, there's a shrine.
And a pole, of course.
And a pole, of course. Is that how you...
Yeah.
Well, a good pole artist always knows when to leave.
When the garden bell is full.
There's that, if you want to cheapen it.
That's it. Well, that's true. That's true. But I've seen it.
I'm sure you do. And have.
Okay.
Exactly.
I declare it on my tax returns for Christ's sake.
Byron Saunders. Alright, before it gets too late, I do want to talk about... went to see a movie this evening, which is the remake of, you know, the 70s Murder on the Orient Express, which was a remake of the original, which is based on Agatha Christie. Agatha Christie is pretty much synonymous with murder mystery, and her Hercule Poirot stories are legendary. There was this, and there was Murder on the Nile or Death on the Nile or something like that. And there are a few of them made. Peter Ustinov played in the original, and of course I know Sean Connery was in it, and I think Vanessa Redgrave, a bunch of actors, really good actors. Wonderful at the time. Actors. But this is Kenneth Branagh's updating reinterpretation of Murder on the Orient Express. It's fun. I was kind of looking forward to it much more than most of my colleagues who were like, oh, why are they remaking this? Why? And because I'm not familiar with the original, I went in with a pretty fresh perspective. My thought is that it's fun while it's fun, and it starts out, you think it's going to take a certain tone.
It does.
And it doesn't start out, it starts out a certain tone, but it doesn't stay with that tone, and so I think that that's part of what's off. I think either a different director or at the very least a director with a different vision. Towards the last part of the movie, third act, you do kind of see where if he had a voice when he did his first film, I think it's called Dead Again, which was a fun thriller with a twist, and it was just slightly arch, which is what I think that this needs, and it would have been, you know, it definitely could have been improved, but I say all that to say that I did enjoy it.
It was indeed fun.
Yes.
And I totally agree with you, because I thought that for what they wanted to take us away from the second version of this wonderful piece, Agatha Christie story, because with the version that you and I are more familiar with, establishes a real dynamic character as developed by, what's his name?
Who were we talking about?
Who played Hercule?
Oh, that was Peter Ustinov.
Peter Ustinov. Ustinov's version is dynamic. Now, this version is extremely good.
It's
because
Kevin Spacey.
Because in the first... not Kevin Spacey.
But Kenneth Branagh.
Kenneth Branagh. Because in the first 15 minutes of this film, you are locked into storylines, backdrop, cinematography, everything is working like it's supposed to, and I mean it's very enjoyable because he engages you into a storyline based on a very storied train and a murder mystery, and so to recreate it really was to take a step, and with the first 10 minutes I thought he really brought it home, and then it started to kind of unravel slowly. And slowly, not that it was a bad unravel, it's just that it could have gone to another whole place because it forgot its cleverness. It began very clever. And we all know the story. And is it the same as the other one? Yes and no. Because it's still the same Agatha Christie story. But the execution of it, I would say that Peter Ustinov just blew it away. But I like this one a lot. So there it is.
There it is.
Yes.
Elena, you want to add anything there?
Hmm?
All right. Well, have you seen the original Murder on the Orient Express?
Yes.
Did you like it?
I did. And my mother was really into Agatha Christie.
70s, the one from the 70s.
And I like the original.
Okay. Now I want to hear from Elena. Go ahead, Elena. You saw it? Your mother was
a fan? Well, she was a huge fan. She read all of Agatha Christie. She was more into the female detective than Hercule. But obviously, Poirot.
The Marple.
Miss Marple.
Yes.
She was really into her, and she looked forward to those. But Poirot, obviously, was the main draw. But regardless, she made me read one of the Agatha Christie books, and I was... It didn't draw me in terms of that genre doesn't necessarily, but it is a typical drama that where I think, you know, put on the screen properly can really, like, then you can kind of see the genius, which I know that you're not supposed to use a cinema as a crutch to reading. Just as, you know, opera fans don't like, patrons who use subtitles to you know experience. I disagree with that. So but you know the cinematic adaptation, if it holds true not only to the book and can take it even further, that's really an impressive feat.
Yes, it is.
Because you're treading on plagiarism ground. And to make it your own work, whereas to your point from the top of the show or the documentary, you can create your own form. Here, you're using another's words to making it your own.
Yes.
That's a feat in itself.
Yes. I do understand. Absolutely. You can follow us on the web at lifeislikesciencefiction.com. You can go to our website and you can download shows over the last 10 years, or you can follow us on Instagram. It's on Twitter, at Night Shift.
Anywhere you want to go.
N-I-T-E-S-H-I-F-T.
We don't care. We're not on air anymore.
N-I-T-E-S-H-I-F-T-Z. Night Shifts. And that's our Twitter. You can tweet us. And, you know, you should like us on Facebook. And then you can have access to all our social media. On Facebook, we're N-I-T-E-S-H-I-F-T. Night Shift. And this has been a... interesting mix, the old school.
Yes,
you old fools.
I loved it.
Elena, did you enjoy yourself?
I did. I'm my own sex hero.
You are your own sex hero, you said?
Yeah. But I need to think of a new name.
Yeah, I'd think a better name than your, you know, sex hero is better. All right. Do you know what this is?
The music. Are you asking me, do I know what the music is?
Yes, of course.
I like it because I like this kind of soothing, calming experience. Who is this? Please share with me. I probably do know it, but I can't recall it at the moment.
Byron doesn't know, Elena.
Yes, what is it?
What? You don't know? No. Oh, something you don't know?
Yes,
he doesn't know.
Every once in a while it happens. So please illuminate me, my intellectual friend. What is this piece?
That's from Star Trek.
Star Trek.
The original series.
Wow. Which scene?
Oh, this is early on, first season, early first couple episodes.
Okay. And who is in the scene?
Kirk.
Of course. This is a Kirk love story scene?
Yes.
Of course it is. So I'm getting closer now. Is this with the green lady?
Yes.
I know which one you're talking about. I know all of the Star Trek. Yes, I agree. This is wonderful. He was in love. She was in lust. No, he was in lust. She was in love. I take it back.
Bart Saunders.
Mike Sargent.
Right.
Yes.
They love the. That's from Star Trek.
Kirk was a bad dude. Yes, he was. He was very.
Elena, did you tell that was from Star Trek? Could you tell?
No. I actually did sound familiar, but I didn't pinpoint it.
Right place. And you're an old TV. Exactly. You're an old TV junkie, Elena. So.
No, but I like Big Valley.
Oh, that's Joan Crawford.
Big Valley. No, Barbara Stanwyck.
Barbara Stanwyck. Yes, Barbara Stanwyck.
You told me you had the hots for her.
I did. I thought she was real. I mean,
you thought she was the most hot.
Yes, cowgirl of the I mean, the best cowgirl you could ever have.
She told her like it was.
She
was. She was scary. She was like Jane Wyman in Falcon Crest.
Mm. The early Jane Wyman.
Jane Wyman in Falcon Crest.
Wow.
Wow. She was like Jane Wyman.
Okay.
In Falcon Crest. That's an interesting.
Okay, I'll go with that.
You and what's his name will get along well.
So, Mike.
All right. Byron Saunders.
Mike Sargent.
Elena Fulton.
Elaine.
Yes.
Until
it was wonderful
time.
To be back with you, gentlemen.
Yes, this has been so special.
I will try to think of a superhero and name.
Oh, my goodness, yeah.
You can email us at lifeislikesciencefiction.
Or any suggestions, go on our Facebook page.
lifeislikesciencefiction@gmail.com is our email. But like us on Facebook, NITESHIFTZ.
Offer up a name for me, and I'll walk down your street for free.
This has been Night Shift.
Peace and love always.